Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
So we all know what Christmas is like in 21st century Ireland, but what was it like pre-Christian, a pre-Christian Christmas? Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. And everyone, of course, is gearing up this week for Santa Claus himself or for the birth of Jesus Christ or for whatever it is you particularly believe in this time of year. But we wanted to find out, what were the traditions before all the traditions that we have and how they came to be? So we're talking about Christmas in medieval Ireland, and back with us on the podcast, if you missed her, St. Bridget's Extraordinaire from a couple of years ago, is Niamh Witcherly from Maynooth University. Niamh, how's it going?
It's great. Thank you very much for having me on.
So pre-Christian Christmas, did we have sort of rituals that were around the same time of the year? Because I know we've talked, I think, before about how the date of Christmas was kind of aligned with certain pagan festivals, was it?
Yeah, I'm sorry to disappoint, but unfortunately, it's just not possible for us to reconstruct what, you know, a kind of a winter festival or some kind of a, you know, pagan traditions or rituals might have looked like, right? In, you know, way back into the past, because we just don't have the kind of the evidence for what, you know, what they might have practiced. The thing is, as you said, is like Christmas is, by its very definition, it's Christian. Mm-hmm. It's a Christian festival. So therefore, that's what it was also in medieval Ireland. Even though we can't reconstruct what any kind of non-Christian faiths might have kind of looked like in the Irish past before Christianity, we do have kind of little snippets of kind of information, but it's all kind of from the perspective of Christians, if you know what I mean. Right. So it's not exactly unbiased, you know, testimony. But, you know, for example, St. Patrick, who was, you know, our earliest surviving written documents come from St. Patrick from the 5th century. And he criticized sun worship in, you know, as, you know, as a non-Christian, from non-Christian believers, you know, and he says that believers in Christ adore the true sun, right? So the Son of God, the true sun. But you do kind of get a connection, I think, that what does come out in the sources is that they were slightly obsessed with the diminishing hours of sunlight around Christmas time. Okay. You know, and you get kind of these little kind of insights into what it might have been like to live back then, because we just cover the place in, you know, fairy lights and, you know, light festivals and, you know, all that kind of thing. And we go to loads of those kind of events, and we're not that far removed from our medieval ancestors in that regard. It's just that we have electricity and technology, which they didn't have. But we do have a number of references, you know, to candlelight and to try the attempts to brighten, you know, those gloomy days. So even though we don't have kind of written evidence of what these kind of non-Christian faiths might have been like, any kind of bits of information that indicate kind of sun worship or something, that definitely rings true, you know, because you were so tied into, everybody was tied in, attuned to nature, because you didn't have, you know, technology to try and circumvent it. So every single person felt the cold and felt, you know, those shortening days the same as we do now. So of course, when the when the sun started to come out and the heat, you know, it started to heat up in the summer, you could see, we would call that kind of like sun worshipping as if it was a religious thing. But I'm sure it's just basic, you know, anthropology, basic human nature to want to, you know, feel the sun on your skin.
Yeah, and to be delighted the summer was finally here. I had never really thought of it in that way, but it's very easy to understand that if this was a society that had a particular religious ethos or you know, whatever they had, like you say, we don't really know, but that the year getting dark and cold and gloomy, oh, that could be some sort of supernatural force that has its powers at this time of year and it, you know, is pushing in on us. And thank God the sun is back, like all of us, the sun is back as it gets on later into the year.
Yeah, and as well, I can imagine, again, this is pure speculation. I can tell you a minute about the, you know, the written sources that we do have for, you know, actual Christmas, you know, in a Christian society. But you can imagine then, as you said, it kind of those kind of darkening days, it bring people indoors and bring people together. So you can't be out working the land, you know, what past darkness to the same extent. So you're all going to be gathered into a tight space, right? So maybe you do have, you know, more communal activities or telling stories or singing songs or that kind of thing because you're indoors together for longer periods around a fire, you know. But again, that's just speculation on human nature on things that would, you know, keep people occupied during those long, long, long winter nights.
Yes, well, they did not have Netflix to keep them going. So what? Where's the first evidence of actual Christmas then, of it being celebrated for the first times in Ireland?
Yeah, well, again, so Christmas actually wasn't a big deal at all in medieval Ireland. I'm sorry to say, not like it is now, you know. So again, it's fundamentally a Christian festival. So we can really see that as well coming out in the Irish language. So kind of that's the linguistic evidence, I suppose, is some of our earliest evidence. So for example, the term in Old Irish would have been nuttluck, which was essentially comes from the Latin Natale, natalitia, meaning birth, right? The birth of Christ. So that's what's preserved in the Irish language. In the Irish text, you have Nulloch Mór was celebrated on the 25th of December. So that's the big day. But then also Nulloch Beag was important as well. And that was the Feast of the Epiphany on 6th of January. And you also had a little Christmas or Nulloch Stéile, the Christmas of the Star. You know, so we have like a 9th century text called the Martyrology of Angus. And that kind of poetically commemorated the birth of Jesus on the 25th of December. And it says, you know, at great marvelous Christmas, Christ was born from quite pure Mary. And we kind of do get this sense of kind of these two Christmases or this like special period between the two Christmases. For example, much later than this, but it's a nice little reference if I can remember exactly. But essentially, there's a reference in the 13th century in the Annals, which are these kind of yearly chronicles that were kept in Ireland, an incredible resource that anybody can actually look up online. UCC have this Celt website, and it's great. You can look up any year, you can look up different locations. But in the annals, it says just how, if I can remember exactly, basically how, you know, they had to rest between the two Christmases, right? Which is probably, it's kind of what we still do now, you know, resting between, you know, over that kind of Christmas period. And I said kind of Christmas wasn't as a big a deal kind of in medieval Ireland. It wasn't as big a deal as Easter. Like Easter was. It was a much bigger deal on the liturgical calendar. And we see Easter being recorded in the text much more often. And even in things like the iconography, you know, like on the high crosses, there's loads of images of the crucifixion and the passion of the Christ. But potentially, we only have one depiction of the nativity of the Christ and of Christmas. One of the earliest references actually we have to Christmas doesn't even mention the birth of Christ, even though I've been talking about that as the most important thing. But it does kind of focus on what we've been talking about those shortening days. And it's in the Antiphonary of Bangor, which may have been written as early as the year around 690. But again, it focuses on the joy of the monks at this time that they had passed the shortest day of the year and that there were longer days to come, you know. So again, it's focusing on kind of like that around that kind of winter solstice, you know. So What else do we have? We have the really famous text actually from medieval Ireland is the Voyage of St. Brendan. I don't know, some people might know about it because Tim Severin, he embarked on this Atlantic voyage back in, I think it was 1976, where he was trying to recreate anyway the type of vessel that St. Brendan and his monks might have traveled in. But in this it became, it's kind of referred to as an Irish medieval bestseller because it was so popular in Europe and it was copied so many times. It's a great tale. But Easter is a big deal in this text. Christmas isn't as big a deal, but it does actually mention Christmas. And again, it focuses on light, which is interesting. And it says that basically, Brendan and his monks, they celebrated Christmas on the island of St. Alva. And the text says, during which they observed the altar lamps being magically set alight by a flying arrow, the candles burning without being consumed because the light is of a spiritual kind, so kind of a spiritual sustenance. But every time I read that, I just think of Harry Potter, you know, and the lights, you know, that they just come on, you know, with a flick of the wand. So there's it's this kind of, I suppose, as I said, the kind of human obsession with light and candlelight and stuff certainly comes through around the texts around Christmas time.
Yeah. And were there certain things that maybe were only allowed at Christmas time or a time, Christmas and Easter, that type of thing with maybe early monks or with Irish society at the time, that maybe down the line gives us the idea that, oh, it's a time of feast, it's time of celebration.
Yeah, exactly. There are little hints, right, that kind of indicate that it was a time of feasting. And again, as we've been kind of talking about, you know, people were probably spending longer indoors, you know, and out from the weather. So we kind of, so some of these kind of religious texts, so these are aimed at kind of clerics and monks within a religious setting. Some of these texts tell us that they were allowed, you know, they had special dispensation for kind of treats around Christmas time, but also on Easter, at Easter and on Sundays. So these treats are things like bread. Wheaten bread is probably what is meant. But here, listen, I mean, a fresh batch, you
Yeah,
know,
it's a, like it's not
bread is
quite a selection
nothing
box,
better.
but you know,
Yeah,
like
but
if it is
it's
a
nothing
sourdough
better,
cob on this Christmas
right?
Day, it's not bad.
You know, with some nice salty butter. You know, like Abbot Dubliter, who was the Abbot of Finglas, which was a big deal in the Middle Ages, a really important church. They observed a really strict abstinent lifestyle, but they permitted a relaxation of their rules at Christmas. So that says that during the feasts of Christmas and Easter and Whitsun. And then there's another religious text, a set of monks' rules, and this laments the drunkenness of some clerics during these holy festivals, so Christmas and Easter. So we get kind of like little hints that this was a time of kind of feasting and celebration. Much later saga tales, right? We have these two kind of big texts. We've an Irish saga tale, which is the Cug a Gaeilge Olaf, the War of the Irish Against the Foreigners. That's a text that dates to the 12th century. And we have this other kind of Icelandic saga called Brennu Njal saga, which is even later still and is slightly inspired probably by the Cug a Gaeilge Olaf. But anyway, in these two texts, they do refer to kind of give an insight to Christmas being a time of kind of political summits, you know, where people come
Okay.
together and have, you know, big important meals, you know, between big important men kind of things. So, for example, Brennu Njal saga talks about, it describes this big lavish Christmas feast, kind of political summit that was attended by Sitrick Silkenbeard, who is the Hibernian Norse King of Dublin. I've referred elsewhere to him being the greatest Dubliner of all time. But this is kind of describing this big feast that happened around Christmas in 1013 before the Battle of Clontarf at Easter in, sorry, yeah, 1013 with the Christmas before Battle of Clontarf at Easter, 1014. And like it's dramatic fiction, but it does kind of give an insight into how this was a time for a display of hospitality. You know, as I said, where important people get together. So we have other references in the sources to kings spending Christmas at important monasteries, you know, such as Clonmacnoise, the taxes and dues had to be paid at Christmas time. Like for example, Muel Sochnal, the King of Tara, he had a big victory over Dublin in 989, and he then demanded an ounce of gold per each kind of enclosure, kind of each yard, each garden, from the Dubliners every Christmas. And we kind of see that Christmas must have been a time that people came together and that there was a lot going on because we've loads of attacks on churches happening at that
Right.
time. And they were attacking clearly because that's when where they could, raid people and goods. So for example, the Church of Clonmore was attacked at Christmas in 836, and Iona was attacked, the big Church of Iona was attacked in 986. So it's clearly a time when people are getting together and there's a lot going on as well.
So robbery, drunken priests, politics, and feasting. It sounds like Christmas hasn't really changed all that much since medieval Ireland after all. Dr. Lee Wycherley, sorry, go on, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, we don't have that many references. So initially, I'm kind of like, oh, it's not really a big deal. Christmas, there wasn't a whole lot going on. And, of course, once you actually get into it, you find enough little snippets that you can bring them all together. And the one last thing I did want to say, actually, is that we do have loads of references to snow.
No.
Right, actually. So, they were snow was a big problem because, the livestock, were out and unprotected and kind of led to famine and all kinds of things. So they weren't exactly dreaming of a white Christmas in the same way that we may do now. But clearly it was something that was noteworthy because we've loads of references to snow
Dr.
going
Niamh
on.
Whichley from Maynooth University, thank you once again for joining us on Let Me Explain. And listen, have an absolutely wonderful Christmas. I hope you and everyone at Maynooth has a good one.
Sorry, thanks a million, Sean. I should have
Thank you so much. That's it for this episode of Let Me Explain. And we will be back with another episode post-Christmas next week.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.